Welcome to Fantasy Feud, a pitcherless baseball podcast where we're tackling the most relevant debates in fantasy baseball each week. I'm Sarah Sanchez, and I'm here with my co-host Shelley Verstrate to talk through both sides of the hottest fantasy baseball debates right now with some of the greatest minds in the industry. It is the last week of August, and where did the season go? While half of your league is transitioning to fantasy football, some of our friends in the industry who are all baseball all the time are already looking ahead to next year's draft, and we have one of those brave souls on today for some draft debates in August. What could possibly go wrong? How are you thinking about drafting next year? Are you all still focused on this year, Shelley?
I'm still focused on this year. Like I mean, we'll talk about our guests here in a second, but people who draft now, I don't know. I think y'all are crazy. I think it's fun. I mean, I knew this draft was going to be happening. And as soon as it was over, I was like, okay, let me see the board. I got to see it. So it's just like one of those like little addictions. You got to, you know, scratch that itch kind of thing. I'm really excited to honestly for the season to be over to start drafting again, because sometimes that is the funnest part.
Yeah, I am a huge draft person. Like I wind up signing up for too many gladiator drafts because I just love drafting. So as soon as this board came out, I was like, oh, we are definitely going to have to talk about it on the show. And as luck would have it, we already had our guest scheduled for this week. We're excited to welcome Brian Etchkin to the show. You know him as KC Bubba. You know him from his excellent work at Baseball HQ, Fantasy Pros, the Bubba and the Bloom podcast, which is seriously, you can't miss it, y'all. It's one of the most fun places to hang out. Bloom boards all day. And the Benched with Bubba pods. He's really everywhere, including Rob DiPietro's Way Too Early Meatball Draft, which we'll make sure to link in the show notes so you can check it out. We're going to pull some debates from that draft board and talk about them with Bubba. How's it going?
I am doing great. I've been looking forward to this for quite some time. You two are, it's a great listen, and you guys are great for working around my schedule to be on the show. So, and it just, like you said, happened to work out. We scheduled this a while ago, and perfect timing to talk about us in this draft. And Shelley's not wrong. We are crazy for doing this. And it's the old scratching the itch thing. It's fun doing it in the moment. And then you have to kind of revert back going, wait, we can't root for these guys for another, you know, 7 months or so. So yeah, lots of fun, but I'm glad to be here and talk about it for a bit.
Yeah, we're so excited to have you on. Thank you for making the time. For those of you who are new to the show, just some rules of the road. This is a debate podcast. It's a little bit different than your regular fantasy baseball show. We are going to talk through some of the key moments from this draft with mini debates. Each debater will get 3 minutes to make their case. There will then be a question and answer between the debaters or with the moderator asking questions of the debaters, followed by a series of 1 minute rebuttals if we need them every now and again. We get through the question and answer period, and it's pretty clear we all agree. So we kind of just let the rebuttals go by the wayside, but you'll know that when you see it. Once the debate is over, we'll move on to the next topic and just kind of keep it moving. That's how we roll here on Fantasy Feud. So debate number one, let's start off with pick number one. Shohei Ohtani putting together a season for the ages goes 1-1 overall. However, according to the Fangraphs player rater, Aaron Judge was actually the highest value player so far in a standard 5x5 15 team at $54 versus 49.6 for Ohtani. So it's, you know, super close. There are also a handful of other guys, Bobby Witt Jr. and more. If you had the number one pick overall in the draft today, who are you taking? Bubba, as our guest, we'll start with you.
It's a question I'm glad I don't have in this draft, because it is very, very challenging with so many great players. Aaron Judge just came off a monster week. We have Witt, we have Ohtani and others. I would still lean Ohtani. I would still go Shohei Ohtani. It's the luxury of having, he should be back pitching next year. So you have to put that mindset in place as well. He's already gone 40-40 this year with a month of the season to go. Like legit could be a 45-45. I'm not going to put 50-50 out of the realm of possibility for a guy of Shohei Ohtani's skill set. He hits for average. He does it all. He's an amazing unicorn. That's what Shohei Ohtani is. And next year you get to throw hopefully 25, 30 starts into the mix. That might take away some of his offensive prowess because of those games pitching. But overall, you're getting a guy that can benefit you in so many ways for a fantasy team, especially in a draft champions type format where you have 50 players and, you know, you can pick and choose if you want him to hit, you want him to pitch. He gives you versatility. If you have a lot of injuries and anybody that plays draft champions, you realize this time of the year, a lot of red is on your rosters. So the flexibility from pitcher to hitter, not just different positional hitting positions, is tremendous from a guy like Ohtani. So I would go Shohei Ohtani number one. He went number one, but it's a very interesting discussion.
Man, that's a really great point with this being a draft champions league. I am looking at a lot of red on my draft and holds right now. And Shohei having that multiple position versatility really would be nice on a draft and hold roster. Shelly, if you're taking someone with the first overall pick in a draft now in late August, who's it going to be?
For me, it's, and it has been pretty much since probably May, is Bobby Witt Jr. He is amazing. And it's really, really honestly crazy. You know, he has over 8 WAR. I think it's 9. Yeah. Over 9 WAR, excuse me. And he's probably not even going to win AL MVP because of Aaron Judge, which I just find that absolutely crazy. But for me, it's definitely going to be Witt. You're going to have decent average. Yeah. He's not going to hit 347, you know, next year, but you know, I could see him hitting 300 again. Right. Yeah. Right there. And then, you know, the only thing that he has not done this year that he's done previously is run. He could totally bring that back next year, bring it with the power and the average, and you have an absolute complete player. He's just kind of the guy that I'm going to take a gamble on. You know, you're going to have plenty of plate appearances. You know, with Ohtani, he's going to be pitching. Is that going to kind of bring down some of his offensive, you know, ceiling? Maybe, maybe not. I mean, it's Ohtani. He does everything so well. So, but for me, it's Witt Jr.
Yeah, I mean, if you're looking at Bobby Witt right now, that 347, 27 stolen bases, 27 home runs is pretty incredible. Shelly, my first question is for you, and I'm just sort of curious, do you think that the Royals are going to be the type of offense that you'll want to be invested in next season? I know that they've made a bunch of strides this season so far, and I'm curious, do you think that next season they'll be even better? And that might take away one of the only negatives for Bobby Witt, which is that he doesn't play for like a Dodgers, Yankees super team.
Right. I mean, their offense has been pretty good this year. Their, you know, top of the line prospects aren't really going to contribute next year. So it's probably going to be the same group of guys next year as it is this year. And they've done well, and he has done extremely well there. And Pasquantino has started to get his power back just slightly. Michael Massey has been pretty good. You know, he's now starting to lead off. And my Achilles heel, MJ Melendez, who I cannot stop drafting ever, is starting to get back and, you know, get back into the power. So I think that it will be about the same, and I'm fine. Like, if you drafted Bobby Witt, you're not complaining at all.
Yeah, fair enough. And my apologies to the Royals, who have 643 runs scored this year. And I definitely sort of wrote that off a little bit because I don't watch enough Royals baseball, clearly. So my apologies to the Kansas City Royals. Bubba, on the Shohei front, I'm curious. You and Shelly both mentioned that him getting some of those starts might take away from some of his offensive stats. And I think that is true. That's one of the reasons that I probably would go somewhere else other than Ohtani here. But the draft and hold positional flexibility piece that you threw in there really sort of moves me back a bit to where I might take Shohei in that format particularly. How do you think you can deploy that throughout the season? I think about this usually with guys who are like corner and middle eligible, but this is a guy who you could theoretically slot in your offense or on your pitching staff as the best player you have.
Yeah, because, and I know it seems like a long time ago, but before he did get hurt, and that's a big, you know, before he got hurt, he was running Cy Young contention in that at that time of year for the Angels. So that's a plus when you have an MVP hitter and a Cy Young pitcher. That's pretty sweet. We talk about pitching taken away from his offensive potential. He still has basically 600 plate appearances. This will be his fourth straight year of over 600 plate appearances. He's had almost 640 or more the previous two out of three seasons. You got 40 plus home runs three out of the 4 years, 20 plus stolen bases. We're still seeing an elite talent offensively factoring in a potential ace on the mound. Now, the hard part is which weeks do you start him hitting, pitching, whatever. A lot of people I've talked to throughout the last couple of years just watching Shohei even before the injury, he's going to be a hitter probably 70 to 80% of the time. That's just the reality of the situation. And that's 80% hitting and 20% pitching. Shohei is still pretty darn good when all things are said and done. Now, in a perfect storm, I'd love to see Shohei be the closer for the Dodgers, and he just hits every game and comes in and closes. That'd be awesome. but that's just my fantasy world. So it is a concern, yes, but I think we've seen him be able to juggle the situation before, and I don't see that stopping him in 2025.
Love that. Do you, either of you have questions for each other that you want to jump in with?
I guess mine, besides I want to pick Shelley's brain and MJ Melinda sometime because I'm with you on that. It's very tilting. But I do want to know with Bobby Witt, who I do think is really good. I think he's young, and I think we might not even have seen the ceiling yet, which is crazy to think about. Just for fun, because I've had this thrown at me for Bo Bichette in the past, what gives you the inclination that he will run again? Because I've always stood up for Bo Bichette running, and he never does, and people always tell me, like Toby Batflip Crazy used to always make fun of me, saying Bo Bichette doesn't run. So what's your thoughts on Bobby Witt?
At least for me, I just feel that he's going to run. It wasn't such a humongous drop-off as compared to Bo. Yeah. Maybe he's not going to get back to those 40 stolen bases, but if I can still get 25 to 30, that is great. And, you know, maybe he's not going to run as much as I'm hoping that he will, but any guy who can give you at least, you know, 35-20, that's definitely a first round pick for me.
Definitely.
Good stuff. Shelley, any questions for Bubba?
Not really. Because Ohtani, like, it's like so many different avenues that like his next season can go, because this is going to be his second Tommy John. I mean, I don't know if this, because it was either a brace or Tommy John. Honestly, at this point, I just called them all Tommy Johns. And we've seen like his now teammate, Walker Buehler, really struggle. I mean, obviously, Walker Buehler and Shohei Ohtani are two very different pitchers. Yeah. But does that concern you at all? And then if it does, are you worried more that his offense stuff might decrease a little bit as well?
It's a very valid question. He is 30 years old right now. So two Tommy Johns entering your 30s is probably not the most ideal situation to be looking at for a pitcher. So it is slightly concerning. There's no doubt about it. Like, part of me would love to see the Dodgers just, like I say, either put him at closer or just nix the whole pitching thing. Just like, hey, this dude's an amazing hitter. Just let him do what he's doing at the plate. So it is concerning now to maybe be a problem with his offensive skills, because maybe he's thinking about his pitching too much. I don't think so as much, because Ohtani seems just to be built different. He just dealt with the gambling situation with the guy, and it didn't faze him one bit. I can't imagine moving from Japan to the U.S. as easily as he did things. Was pretty impressive. Like Sarah has seen say, it took a little time. Guys will admit it takes time to get House on Kim. Like these guys, it takes time coming overseas to here. So I just think Shohei is built different, and it's a lot of I think, so there's no proof behind it. But he, like I say, he's a unicorn, and it's absolutely amazing to see what he could do out there through anything, basically.
Great stuff. You each get 1 minute to make your case for your 1-1 overall. Bubba is our guest. We'll start with you.
Again, kind of Shelley hit on it a second. We're kind of grasping at straws here, arguing over the 1-1 with these three picks. So I'll take Ohtani, though, just for the flexibility that he brings to your team. The flexibility with still being a 40 home run, 20, 30 stolen base guy. He's going to count in all five hitting categories, as well as potentially bring you a Cy Young arm. So I'll take Ohtani 1-1, but again, grasping at straws here.
Great stuff, Shelley.
Yeah, like Bubba said, you can't really go wrong with the number one overall pick, but we did say that coming yes. into this draft season as well. So, yeah. But anyway, you can't really go wrong with any of these two players. They are phenomenal. You want them on your team. I don't know. I'm going to go with the younger, more just the younger guy where maybe he hasn't reached his ceiling and we might have seen Shohei Ohtani's ceiling.
Great stuff for our first debate. And it sounds like either Ursillo or Soto agree strenuously with their snores. So is that an Ursillo store or a Soto store?
It's definitely Ursillo. Like he's definitely like an old man. He just snores so loudly.
I love your dogs. Like, I'm not even kidding. Like they just bring such a smile on my face every time I see it.
Well, it's like a trifecta here. We've got the ambulance and the dogs back to back. That's how we roll here on Fantasy Feud. Speaking of, we're going to roll into a second debate, and our guest Bubba is going to moderate this one.
This is a fun one because a question I've been asked recently is how do you look for potential breakouts or whatever in these drafts? Because a lot of, you know, interesting names were taken and some fall, some rise in this draft. And a lot of it's looking for potential bounce back, young players that maybe scuffled a bit and could show a rebirth or a comeback this next year. Well, we saw one guy that struggled in the past have a big 2024 in Jaren Duran, and now we've seen Corbin Carroll basically be a top five pick, and he is, you know, on the struggle bus this year, but looks like he's showing signs of life to end this season. So you got the breakout season with Jaren Duran. You got Corbin Carroll, rookie of the year, showing the you know, sophomore slumps potentially going through here. And now it brings the question, who are you drafting? So I guess it's a two-parter here. Are you drafting either guy in the second round next year? And who would you rather roster? And we will open it with you, Sarah, for Jaren Duran.
Yeah, this is a fun question. And I was a little bit surprised to see both of these guys in the second round. I was kind of hoping against hope, really, that they would fall to the third or fourth round and be a super value there. But I know exactly why they're not. These are guys who can go 30-30 and absolutely crush. I mean, Corbin Carroll was basically a top five pick last year after winning the rookie of the year. And Jaren Duran, I think we kind of slept on him last year. I think this is a guy who we should have been drafting higher in 2024. When I was looking up some numbers for this debate, and admittedly, it's partial playing time because 2023 was a little bit of an up and down year for Duran. He dealt with some injury issues, but 362 plate appearances in 2023, he slashed 295, 346, 482. He hit 8 home runs. He stole 24 bases. He had a WRC plus of 120. He hit the ball incredibly hard. And he basically showed us what he was capable of and then came in this year and just knocked everything out of the water. He took a K rate that was close to 25%, dropped it down to 22%. He's slashing 293, 353, 523 with 19 home runs and 32 stolen bases. He's leading off for a Red Sox team, which, let's be honest, is better than we thought it was going to be at the start of the season, at least way better than I thought they were going to be. I did not think this team was going to be in contention down the stretch, and here we are. And when you look at his StatCast page, all of the underlying numbers, the hard hit rate, the barrel rate, the sprint speed, all of those things you look at to see, is this a legitimate skill set or is this something that's a fluke? It's bright red. So I'm loving what I see from Jaren Duran. I think we're going to see more of it going forward. And yeah, he looks like a second or third round pick. And that's the guy that I would put on my team for next season.
And just for context for the listeners, Corbin Carroll was the third pick in round two. Jaren Duran was the fifth pick in round two. For those that are on to keep track at home, Shelley, give us your case for Corbin Carroll coming off a rookie of the year season.
Yeah, for me, if I had like the back half of the second round, I would want to take either of these two players. But if I had to pick one, it would be Carroll. Basically because I know this is going to sound like very elementary, but his BABIP is 249. That is the lowest BABIP he has ever had in his professional career, and by a lot. Again, like, you can't just say, oh, it's just luck. But it kind of is. And if I'm going to take a gamble on a guy, I want to take a gamble on a guy who had a bad season, and maybe I can get him for a cheaper cost. Right. And then he can come back up because we've seen players go through these roller coasters. Right. And I'd rather buy the dip and then hopefully come back. Maybe I'm just going off just BABIP, and I've watched him play, especially in the second half. It's been, definitely a whole lot better. He's hitting just as much as sorry, I'm trying to find my leaderboard here. There we go. He's hitting just as well as Duran, at least from a power output. He's not running as much. But he's hitting 252, 338 with 33 runs scored and 21 RBIs. It's not bad. I'll take a gamble and hope. Again, he's a 244 BABIP in the second half, and has a 146 WRC plus. I'll bet on the dip and go with Carroll.
Yeah, Carroll is benefiting from the red hot Diamondbacks offense, trying to make a push for another World Series berth the way they're playing right now. So you got the good Red Sox, you got the good D-backs, two young players. I guess this is the time for you two to ask some Q&A here. So Sarah, what do you got on this one?
Yeah, I find Carol fascinating, and I also find Carol terrifying. And full disclosure, Bubba and I almost made a deal where I traded him Spencer Strider for Corbin Carroll last year, and it didn't come together because it was that week where Corbin Carroll's shoulder went wonky, and I was like, oh, I want to wait a week. And then I couldn't do it. Like, I was not sure what Corbin Carroll was going to be after that. And then we had this period of like months where the home run power just seemed gone. And so, Shelly, I guess my question for you is, how do you explain the fact that 12 of his home runs start in July? Like, he hit 6 in July, he hit 6 in August, and prior to that, he has 2. I mean, I find that terrifying for a guy with an injury concern, and that's probably what would keep me away from Carroll.
Yeah, I mean, honestly, I have no idea. Maybe it just got warmer and the ball flew a little bit more. Maybe it was just kind of like those lucky home runs as well. Yeah, I mean, at least for me, I'm not really taking Carroll for the power. Like, I'm hoping that he gets back to his power that he had last year. But if not, I'm hoping that he's also going to run more as well. So, yeah, I mean, I'm concerned. But, I mean, he's played outside of like tough lefties. He plays every day. And I don't think that the Diamondbacks nor Carroll would continuously play like or be in the game if there was actually something wrong. I mean, I know we've heard stories about players where they were hurt all season, but yet they still played. So maybe I'm just trying to make a molehill out of a mountain. but I don't know. I've just always been a fan of Carroll. So I'm just going to go with the guy who I just like more.
Yeah, it's I like both sides of this one in a big way. I'd be happy with pretty much either one of these on my team. And the Carroll conversation is one I've had in my head most of the season, let alone during this draft. And I know some of us have talked off air about the Carroll pick thing, and this could be the biggest gift of the draft if he figures it out. The other aspect is if for some reason the 2/3 of the season we saw, if that somehow comes back to life, that's a problem. So there's a big what if with Corbin Carroll. So with that being said, Sarah, how would you like to rebut the situation?
I mean, I think these are both excellent players, and it is not going to surprise me at all if Jaron Duran takes a little bit of a step back next year. His BABIP is through the roof, unlike Corbin Carroll's. I was just had it up. Let me grab it one more time. But, you know, he's sporting like a 354 BABIP this season. Now, admittedly, that's off a 381 BABIP last year. He's just a guy who happens to be really fast. His career average BABIP is 350. So it's not one of those situations where I think that's going to regress. I think that might just be who Jaron Duran is at this point in his career. At some point in time, he's going to slow down a bit because Father Time catches up with all of us. But for right now, still in his 20s, still leading off for the Red Sox, absent an injury, I really like the situation that Jaron Duran is in. I think I'm probably a little too cautious to invest this high of a pick in Carroll, but that doesn't mean I think it's a bad pick. It just means that I think I build my team a little bit differently, and I'll probably let someone else take on what I see as a little bit of potential injury risk with Carroll. The last thing I'll say is his BABIPs actually haven't gotten better in July and August. He's got like a 210 in July and a 250 in August. Now part of that is probably that he's hitting a bunch of home runs and you don't need, that's not calculated into BABIP. So it's a little bit of a weird stat to have any sort of small sample size with, but I'm probably going to let other people take Carroll. I'll take my chance with Duran. I think it's fascinating that both of them find themselves in the second round. It's a little bit of a fall from grace for Carroll. It's a huge rise for Duran. I don't remember where he went in drafts last season, but he certainly did not get drafted as the guy who was going to have the 11th highest value in the player rater here when we sit on August 27th.
Jaron Duran was ADP 161 in draft champions last year. So wow. Yeah, he quite the jump up to this pick 20 overall. Shelly, what did you have on your final rebuttal here on Corbin Carroll?
Yeah, I guess Carroll is, last year's darling, and I'm just going to bet on that. I mean, we've seen players have extremely good seasons and then you draft them in like the third or fourth round and then they go back to who they kind of always were. I don't know. I just trust Carroll. I've been a fan of his ever since the Diamondbacks drafted him. I just love to watch him play. Just love to watch him actually run around the bases because he's unbelievably fast. So I don't know. There's parts of me as a fantasy manager that I like to roster players that I like to watch. And I'm not saying that I don't like to watch Duran. I just like to watch Corbin Garrett more. So, you know, if it's, if I kind of view the same, the player the same, give me the guy I want to root for.
Fair enough.
Well, and this is Fantasy Feud, so Shelly's not allowed to advocate for a Red Sox.
I was waiting for Shelly to tear him apart, because who else knows how to tear their own players apart than someone that watches them all the time? So I was waiting for her to just nitpick every little thing possible on that one.
I think the last time Shelly advocated for a Red Sox on the show, and this is no shade, by the way, because I have been tearing apart Cubs on this show too, so it is what it is, but it was like when we were talking about Cutter Crawford and Brian Bayo in like the second episode of this show ever.
Exactly.
All right. We are going to take a quick break for our sponsors. On the flip side, we have a lot more debates. We also have our Love It or Leave It. You will not want to miss any of it. Come right back. And we're back. We're going to pass the moderating duties back to Bubba one more time.
Yeah, this is a fun one here. I wanted to take the helm on this. We're talking closers. And closers in fantasy baseball is always seems to be a controversial topic. Do you take one early? Do you take two studs? Do you just wait till the end? How do you approach the closing landscape? Well, in this draft, I have notes from something I was working on here. There were 10 closers taken by round four. So the first 60 picks, 10 of them were closers. 12 through round five, 15 total. We did 11 rounds. So basically only five more went in the final seven rounds of the draft, making the point that 10 closers went early because draft champions formats, especially drafting in August because we're special like that, you kind of want to have some stability in taking a closer because there's going to be a lot of turmoil, not just to mention potential injuries, like who's going to be the closer and what team, so on and so forth. So that was a big reason so many went early. With these closers going so early, it started in the third round. That's where business picked up. Emmanuel Clase A, Devin Williams, Diaz, Batista, Hader, they all went pretty wild there. So the questions we have for this debate, are you going for one of the closers in the third round? If so, which one? Or are you waiting until later and why? And we'll start with Shelly on this one and we'll mix things up a bit here.
Yeah, for me, yeah, I'm probably going to go for one of the top guys, because it's something as a fantasy manager that I've tried to actually get better at is actually drafting closers early. Because I used to be one of the people who were like, oh no, I'll just take like two of the bottom and then go with that. But then I always find myself at the bottom with saves. So I'm trying to fix that. So this year who did I draft? I drafted Jordan Romano and David Bednar. So great job. So obviously even if you take high picks, it could, you know, blow up in your face. But for me with Diaz, I just feel really comfortable with him in the Mets situation. I mean, I love Class A. I loved him ever since he was like a Rangers prospect, and then he got, you know, flipped to Cleveland for Kluber, and I was like, yay, Cleveland did good. And everyone was like, what the heck are you talking about? Anyway, for me, I'm just going to take like the middle top, right? Because again, Diaz was going, was he going first this year or was that last year? I cannot remember.
Probably both.
Yeah, but I mean, he's just like, he's been like one of the guys, but he only has like 14 saves, and it's been a rocky year. But I think that there's no one else really in the Mets, you know, bullpen that is really going to really push him for his job. And just as long as he doesn't get injured like he did this year, I think that I can still get 25 to 30 saves. So I'm just going to kind of play it safe a little bit and not spend too much.
Yep, pretty sound strategy there. So Sarah, what do you got for us?
Look, I like Edwin Diaz a lot, so I'm not, this is no shade to Diaz, who I think was probably going ahead of Class A before he got hurt last year in the WBC, and then obviously we saw what happened there. The thing about Class A, with the exception of him looking slightly mortal in 2023, that dude has just been unbelievable for like four seasons now. He has back-to-back 40 save seasons, and he's sitting on 38 right now in late August. And there's just any guy who throws 100 is not a safe bet, because we all know what happens with velocity and pitchers and all of that jazz. But it does seem worth noting that a guy who throws a cutter 99 with that slider, who has the results that he does, and it's like a metronome. It's like 70 innings, 40 saves, super great ratios over and over and over again. And you could almost like line up the Statcast cards and they look identical year to year with the exception of 2023. I think Class A is in a really good situation in that he is either going to close for a Cleveland team that is going to be competitive, or they're going to take his very affordable contract and flip him just like they got him for Corey Kluber, and they're going to turn him into something else and he's going to close for somebody else. I don't think there are a lot of teams in Major League Baseball where Class A becomes the setup man. So he strikes me as the type of guy who, if you're trying to draft saves in the August before the next season, he's about as safe as you can get in terms of planting your flag on Emmanuel Class A is going to be healthy. The skills are going to hold up. He's going to have a job. And that job is going to consist of him being on pace for 40 saves by the end of the season. Pitching is always risky, but I think that in this case, Class A would be my guy.
He has been the stronghold at the position for a few years, as you mentioned. Edwin Diaz once was that as well. So it makes for a fun discussion here. Shelley, what kind of questions do you have here for Miss Sarah?
Okay, I have two questions. One is for Sarah, and then I guess one is for the group. So Sarah, does the decrease in strikeout rates, at least K per nine, I know we shouldn't use K per nine, concern you with Class A? Because if they get the same amount of innings, they should relatively get the same amount of saves. So you're going to lose a little bit on Ks.
You are going to lose a little bit on Ks. It doesn't, but this is probably because I'm a Cubs fan and we have been conditioned to not care that much about strikeout rates. Jed Hoyer doesn't like guys who throw a ton of strikeouts. So, you know, a 10K per nine is like where it's at in Cubs land. I kid a little bit, but I do think that effectiveness with that particular pitch combination doesn't necessarily require a ton of strikeouts. And frankly, it might be one of the reasons he's been so durable, right? Like maybe he's throwing, and I have not looked at this, like I've not looked at total pitch numbers or anything, but getting out of an inning via a ground out or via a fly out saves pitches generally in terms of your workload. And Class A has just been a horse there. I do recognize that that is the type of thing that worries people when they look at his numbers. I have been conditioned to not worry about it as much.
That's fair. All right. And then the question for the group, do you think any Cy Young award voter person, do you think anyone is brave enough to put him first in the AL Cy Young award?
Ooh. No, just because no? it seems like they're so ingrained in their heads to not do it. You have to be like so insane, like Eric Gagne was that one year. Mm-hmm. I'm not saying that's right, but I don't think it is at all. And maybe as you know, voters continue to maybe change and get younger, not trying to age people here, but open-minded to these kind of things, that'll change. But I don't think so.
So I don't think they're going to do it this year, mainly because Tarek Skubal exists, sure, which is going to make that really hard. I think that can happen though when there's not really a standout, mm-hmm, and the closer is the standout. Sort of looking at this and I'm wondering, like Tarek Skubal's putting together a real nice season, 160 innings pitched, 2.58 ERA, 193 strikeouts. Logan Gilbert is the other guy that would probably give voters pause there in the American League with 165 and a third innings, 3.21 ERA, which is quite a bit higher, 162 strikeouts, which is kind of, you know, whatever. That 0.59 ERA and 0.67 WHIP that Class A is rocking through 61 innings is super impressive, but I don't think that he is going to pull Tarek Skubal off the top of that ballot unless something crazy happens, like he gets to 60 saves somehow, and I surely don't think that's possible given the number of games that are left. It's an interesting question.
Yeah, you look at that ERA and it's like, blows your mind. So
it's a solid question.
Well, I'll just add one more thing on this one. Like when Edwin Diaz picked up 57 saves in 2018, Blake Snell beat him out because, yeah, sure, he had a 1.89 ERA. It's pretty sweet. Not going to deny that. But 57 saves is pretty ridiculous. And Edwin Diaz was about as untouchable as you could find, and he still couldn't do it. So, yeah, Snell's putting up Skubal stuff, like same thing. But I think it's just you have to be so out there, I guess, to pull it off, or flip side, no one's good enough to even come close starting wise. Yeah, it's tough.
Yeah, this is my question for you, Shelley, and I love Edwin Diaz. When he's right and he's on, he's electric and just good night. Like, good night. We have seen some stuff from Edwin Diaz this season, though, that suggests he's not 100%, right? Like, he had that period where he struggled. He sort of, like, voluntarily pulled himself out of the closer role and then came back. We had the sticky stuff situation at Wrigley Field. I was at that game. That was totally wild. Are you worried about any of the underlying makeup things going on with Diaz, or do you think this is just a function of he came back from an injury, he'll be just fine next year? Because the other closers that went in round three here, I admit, and I'm pulling up the board one more time, all had something that gave me pause. It was like Devin Williams has the back thing, Edwin Diaz has the like sticky stuff and like injury thing, Felix Bautista hasn't thrown a pitch this year, Josh Hader did some weird back and forth stuff. That was part of why I landed on Class A in this particular run of closers.
Sure. For me, it doesn't really concern me. The sticky stuff, I mean, I don't really pay too big of mind to that, because it's so like abstract and like what that actually means. So I don't really give much thought to that. And for me, Edwin Diaz is always up and down, right? And the last couple years, like swinging strikeout rate, 21% in 2020, 16% in 21, 24% in 22, 16% in 24. I'm not trying to be like Bubba's here. I'm not doing like every even year or whatever. I guess technically this would be every odd year. But I just think that he is a volatile pitcher, as most relievers are. And I don't know. I trust him. If he is on, he is on, and you're one of the best relievers. So, you know, with my process, I'll take the third closer off the board, and hopefully, you know, it's the 2022 version, not 24 version.
All right. I guess that means it's time for our rebuttal of the deals. Give us our final selling point. You kind of did there, actually. But give us your final selling point there, Shelley, on Edwin Diaz, who I wouldn't be shocked if we see a bounce back to that previously great form.
Yeah, for me, I mean, I love Class A. I love all of these guys for individual, you know, different reasons. But for me, I don't know. I just took the guy in the middle and I was like, eh, maybe I could get, you know, 35, 40 saves. That's kind of like, I don't really like to pay too much for saves. But third off the board seemed okay. So that's why I went there, honestly.
And Sarah, what do you got for us here on Class A?
I mean, I don't think any pitcher who throws with the velocity that he throws is safe, but I think he's the safest closer on the board. And one of the things I did not do well this year, like Shelley was talking about, is get closers early. I was satisfied to wait until sort of that like top tier to second tier turn. And that has worked out poorly for me because I picked up not a lot of Ryan Helsley. So I think I'm ready to invest in an early closer, and I'd like to go with the one who's looking to put back to back to back 40 save seasons together.
Yep. It's a fun puzzle every season, the closing position.
Honestly, maybe one of the highest risk rewards decisions that we make in fantasy baseball, just in terms of you're looking at a guy who might give you $25 for your team or might give you $1 for your team. And it's basically like
passing on as well.
2 out of 13 guys are going to make it. Good luck. Yeah. And you're passing on the best hitters at the same time.
Yep.
All right. I think Shelley's going to moderate our next debate, so I'm going to pass this one to her.
All right. So we're going to keep this kind of like two-parter question thing going, but we're going to go to the starter side of things. So quite a few, at least, you know, looking at these 11 rounds, quite a few starters who haven't pitched at all this season were actually selected. Some of them are like the top tier guys, and some of them were kind of like, oh, okay. I mean, that's how I thought when I was looking at the draft board. So my question to y'all is, would you be willing to bite the bullet and take one of these guys who has not thrown a ball, you know, so far this season? And which one do you think will return a greater value next season? Bubba, start with you.
Well, usually I would not, but I can see the appeal as it gets later in the draft, which is where most of these went. So I'll preface that first off, but the pitcher I would look at is, I'm a safe drafter to begin with, and now we're taking risk with guys that have not pitched yet. I'll go Brandon Woodruff, and I already can picture one of Sarah's questions to me, so I'll wait until that one comes up here. But when you look at Woodruff, when you're looking at stability and his consistency, even when he's hurt, as long as when he does pitch, we're getting a low 3 to high 2 ERA guy. That's just what Brandon Woodruff does. You're getting plenty of strikeout upside here. It's a guy with a 23%+ K to walk for 4 to 5 straight seasons, which is outstanding stuff. The ratios, the whips, the ERAs, as I mentioned earlier, everything is great with Brandon Woodruff. Wins are, that's a stat we don't need to talk about for another day. But when you're looking at a guy like Brandon Woodruff, consistency is great. The Brewers' offense should actually still be pretty good next year. I don't see that changing much. There's still some young players. As long as, the best catcher in baseball is still there, they're going to be just fine. So I love everything about what the Brewers are building around this. And Woodruff can come back. Doesn't have to be the ace per se, but I do like that quite a bit. And we'll see. I think he did sign a multi-year deal with the Brew Crew. But yeah, I'll take Brandon Woodruff just for the stability he brings when he does go to the mound.
Yeah, I mean, this offseason, this was one of the guys that I wish the Red Sox would take a gamble on because I didn't think that they were going to be that great. So I'm like, oh, yeah, let's kind of do like a down year and then come back up when all those top prospects, start making their debuts. Sarah, who do you got?
I like how Bubba's throwing best catcher in baseball shade with a Contreras brother, by the way, which might be like the only... the battle of the Contreras. It's like the one person I can barely even rebut. But thankfully, this is a pitcher conversation, so I'm just going to sidestep that question and go with the fact that my dude is Shane McClanahan. He went with the 5th pick, it looks like, in the 6th round here, and I just consider that crazy value for Shane McClanahan and what based on what he did in 2022. And at the start of 2023, for that matter, he was winning leagues for me in 2022. I was all in and ready to invest in him in the second or third round. In 2023, I did, and it looked like he was doing it again, and then he got hurt, which always sucks. But this is one of those situations where the stuff is so electric. And the Rays, it's interesting that you brought up the Brewers point, because part of what I like about McClanahan is that the Rays are going to be able to max out McClanahan too, right? And so it's kind of one of these questions of if they trade him, I might be a little bit less interested in McClanahan than I would be with him on the Rays, because I feel like the Rays are going to bring him back to like peak McClanahan, and I am so into that, and I'm just not really sure that another team would do that. Like, I don't think Shane McClanahan on the Cubs becomes quite the guy that I'm that interested in. No offense to Jed Hoyer and company. Actually, tons of offense to Jed Hoyer and company. I like the value on both of these picks a lot. Both of these are second, third round pitchers who are going much later because of the injury. And frankly, when I saw the draft pick on these, I think Woodruff went in the 7th round after McClanahan. I'm like, yes, please sign me up for, I would draft both of them to be 100% clear. But Shane McClanahan's a little bit younger. I think that what he was doing in 2023 before he got hurt was kind of stupid, and coming off a year where he had also put up ridiculous numbers. And so I'm going to go with Shane O'Mac, but I like the Woodruff pick too.
Fair.
Yeah. Shane McClanahan was my before Skeens. So I always watch Skeens starts. And Shane McClanahan was the guy before that. So I totally agree with you. Like, he is fantastic. So I'm just going to let y'all just throw questions at each other. So,
well, I'll start with a question for you, Bubba, and it will not be about why Wilson Contreras is the mentor to the Contreras catcher brothers. Does the particular injury combo that Woodruff has been dealing with, it's kind of unique. It's a lot of shoulder stuff. He had that Renaud syndrome thing going on too. It freaks me out a little bit more with him, mainly because, I don't know, like we were talking about Tommy John earlier. It seems like we all know what to expect from Tommy John recovery, right? Like, Woodruff is dealing with a set of circumstances that is not as common for a pitcher injury. And so it feels like there's more risk there, but maybe that's just me.
No, 100%. The hand situation, like the not feeling in the fingers, the hands were non-syndrome, I believe you said. I always screw up the pronunciation of it. That one is just bizarre. Like, it seems like it just kind of comes up out of nowhere. So that's a little weird. The shoulder, not ideal, but the fact he had the surgery, got it taken care of, missed the whole season. I'm going to take my chances with that one again. The veteran arm that doesn't have to be over, like, dominant, throwing, like, heat that kind of makes me feel better about Woodruff coming back. Can just become a pitcher, not a thrower, which is what I want to see from him. So is it concerning? Yes. All these guys that are hurt are going to be very concerning for multiple reasons, and shoulders are never fun. That's for sure. But if Woodruff can come back and just, you know, be a low 90s guy, even just become a pitcher, I think that's going to be pretty productive, all things considered. My question for you, and it's along the lines of what you just asked me. I know we're not going to say who's better than Molina's or Contreras, because we can both agree it's a Contreras. But we're going to talk real quickly about Shane McClanahan, because I was kind of out on him before he got hurt. Just we saw kind of the ERA started coming up, the consistent domination started deteriorating. The other concern I have, and this is obviously before he got hurt, but now he got hurt, he's had two Tommy John surgeries now, and he's 27 years old. Two, and he's 27. He's got kind of that whip three-quarter angle lefty thing. As a lefty myself, that does not feel good after a while. So that was my concern. How is that is that a concern for you when you're looking at two TJs and he's 27 years old?
It definitely is. I admit that it's a little bit less of a concern than what's going on with Woodruff for me, just because the elbow I feel like is a more known entity than the shoulder in terms of evaluating pitcher injuries from afar. Like none of us are kinesiologists or surgeons or anything like that. So it's not like I have any expertise there, but I just feel like we know what to expect there. I will say there are a couple of really successful second Tommy John instances that I think is the path that Shane McClanahan could take. And that's sort of where I'm writing my hopes here. One is Nathan Eovaldi and the other is Jameson Taillon. And one of the things that I've been fortunate to listen to a lot, and I would hope that whoever is working with Shane McClanahan has also listened to and has taken into consideration, Jameson Taillon has talked a lot about how he switched up his pitch mix in order to keep him from putting himself back in the situation he was in with his second Tommy John. And it seems to have been successful. I mean, he's not striking guys out at the same level that McClanahan does or anything like that. But I do think that there's a blueprint there for recovering from the second Tommy John surgery and staying healthy that I have a tiny bit more confidence in than some of the unknowns. I mean, yeah, like the losing feeling in your hand thing, that is, I agree with you. That's terrifying for a pitcher. And I would like nothing more, despite the fact that they are always a menace to the Cubs, than to see Brandon Woodruff come back full force, because he's truly fun to watch. I've gotten to see him pitch a bunch of times here at Wrigley. But I'm going to err on the side of the injury. I know, even though I agree with you, the fact that it's the second one makes it, there's a reason he went in the sixth round. There's a reason your guy went in the seventh round. Like these are not guys people are willing to take a risk on in the third round.
Completely agree.
Y'all have any rebuttals or?
I'll just say, I think you're taking a risk regardless at this point. Hopefully they're your SP3. I will take more risks in a DC because you'll have a deeper bench of pitchers to hopefully, you know, fill the void if something were to go wrong, but at the same time could hit that, you know, positive bounce back situation in these, but I'll go Woodruff. I'll go with the veteran, the guy that doesn't have to be overly dominant on the mound to be very successful on the mound, where McClanahan is just a hard thrower. Like I'm worried he's got the glass now mentality where I'm just gonna throw it till it breaks. We're gonna fix it and do it all over again. Like he's glass now's flat out said that. And that's what a lot of these young guys, I think, that's how you get paid. That's unfortunately how you get paid these days. So I agree. McClanahan's awesome to watch on the mound. There's no denying that. I'm just concerned that this could be a little bit of a, you know, riskier situation. Plus, first year off of TJ always has control issues, usually control issues. So I'll go Woodruff.
Yeah, that's totally fair. And, you know, honestly, I could not agree more with part of what you said there, which is hopefully this is your SP3 and you're taking a couple of guys who really moderate some of that risk. I mean, the Woodruff pick was taken as an SP3, and he's got Tarek Skubal and Logan Webb ahead of him. I actually love that combo. Like Logan Webb is a horse who's just going to like throw you a ton of innings, right? Tarek Skubal is the ace's ace who isn't hurt. He's like the one guy who throws at super high velo who we're just like, who is not hurt yet. And so I agree with you that this is one of those situations where you're taking a shot and that's like your one shot. I would not take one of these guys with another injured guy. I would be really reticent to have one of them as my SP2. So, but with that said, I'll go with the injury I know. And I know the one thing I might go back on, I might rebut myself on a little bit. the Rays don't exactly take care of the health of their pitchers the way I would like them to. And so maybe I would like Shane McClanahan to go somewhere else. And I'd feel better about him if he were somewhere where they weren't going to ask him to do a bunch of things that are going to get him hurt. But that's the only thing I'll go back on.
That's a good point.
Also, we need Contreras brothers over Molina brothers shirts at FPATS. We got to figure
it
out.
You can wear Wilson's. I'll wear, you know, Williams. We'll call it good.
Done. We are going to take one more quick break for our sponsors. We have two more debates on the flip side. Plus, we have our Love It or Leave It. So stick around. All right. I have the moderating duties for this one, and it is a fun one. This is one of my favorite draft boards of the year because it's the first NFBC draft of the year. It's exciting. It comes with a ton of risk. I just want to say, Bubba, and to everyone who's in this draft, like, thank you for doing this. It's a service to the community, and y'all are flying blind here. I remember the first time I did a draft and hold at First Pitch Arizona, I was like, what am I supposed to go off of? Like, there's no projections yet. You're just kind of like looking at the handful of drafts that have been done, and y'all go into this with your knowledge, what you got from the auction value so far, and like what you think could happen going forward. It's a huge service to the community. So my question for both of you is, in a draft like this, where you are, you know, there's still a month and a half of baseball to be played. There's going to be some playoffs. There's going to be a whole off season. How are you evaluating risk? Do you go for more standard, old, reliable players, or do you reach for ceiling because it's so risky drafting this early? And Shelly, I'll start with you.
Oh, yeah. For me, consistent playing time is key. I try to find players that, yeah, they might not have the highest ceiling, or they might not be as exciting and flashy, but as long as they play pretty much every day, that is what I like. As long as they pitch, you know, every fifth day, right? That is kind of what I'm going for, especially in something this early where anything can happen. I mean, my approach, you could end up with players that are hurt, you know, in spring training too. So it's not a foolproof plan, but I like the, you know, I guess what we're kind of sort of calling like the old fuddy-duddies. I need to find a better term for that. But there's also like players that I would like mark off like my draft board. It'd be kind of like the guys who still have been kind of injured this year and we don't really know. I guess like one guy who comes off the top of my head is Ke'Bryan Hayes, who had been playing with a herniated disc in his back all season. I'm like, as much as I love Cabrizi, I am not going to be drafting him next year. I mean, yeah, he might get that fixed. I don't know what that entails, but it's probably not comfortable, and it's probably, you know, having to go under the knife or whatever. But I'm just like, it's guys like that that just scare me off. So give me the kind of just the old boring people, I suppose.
All right. Old boring playing time. Bubba, what about you? How are you evaluating risk in this draft? And I'm going to go off camera briefly while you're answering this question, because if I don't plug my computer in, we are going to lose this podcast. But Bubba, the floor is yours.
Boring is beautiful, Shelly. Boring is beautiful. That's the phrase that I always roll with. But for me, it's more just I like to bring a good floor to the table. And sure, there's risk. I took Royce Lewis. People argue risk there, but I made sure to get Alex Bregman later as a potential floor type play. Bregman is the most boring floor player on the face of the planet, but that's what he does time and time again. But like a lot of things, I'm just looking for statistical floors. I look for a lot of power speed guys. If it's 15-15 guys, 20-20 guys, just potential along that regard, because we are drafting so early. A lot of these guys, unfortunately, are going to get dinged up, or things are going to change by the time the season actually starts. Like, I started out with Ronald Acuna last year. I had the number one pick. That went great. You know, my pitchers were Max Scherzer and Yuri Perez and Adbert Alzolay. So that was awesome. So a lot of things can change, and you just got to kind of go with the flow. But I really like to look at the potential, the power speed guys I can build around in those regards. Like, you know, Brenton Doyle could be a 20-20 guy again. Jake McCarthy's got some power and speed. Fitzgerald, love him or leave him, he's got the upside. There's a lot of that when I'm drafting. So I kind of look for that floor that's going to help me out in most categories early on and allow me to take some shots later in the draft, because I am not a big shot taker early on. That's never been me, and don't know if it ever will be me, but I like to build that floor as best I can, which is tough going in blind in a 15-team draft like this.
Yeah, it is tough. And I think it's particularly tough when you're like, we have the information that we've got. We don't have projections for next season, those types of things. Bubba and Shelly, do y'all have any questions for each other before I have a couple of questions for y'all?
Not really, just because it's strategy when you're drafting is such a personal bias or basis, or I don't know, game plan for each person. So it's hard to critique. Like, I have nothing against what Shelly's doing personally. I've done the boring, like just nice floor things many times, and I get it completely. I guess if I had to ask Shelly anything, it's how many of these kind of just consistent playing time guys would you take before you start taking chances?
That's a very good question, honestly. And a lot of how I draft is how I'm feeling about my team. Like, if I'm starting to feel that I need to take more shots, then I start taking shots. It's not really like a perfect like science thing that I have like written down or whatever. Honestly, it's just feels. I mean, yeah, I kind of track my stats, you know, as I'm, you know, picking players off projections. But I mean, if I was doing a draft like this, I would just go on feel. I mean, I like your Lewis pick, and I'm usually not a big fan of Lewis there, but hopefully one day he will be able to stay healthy. And I hope it for you, I hope it's next season. But that's just, you take the guys who you feel really good about. That's kind of what I do.
Yeah, no, I'm with you on that. A lot of it is feel. You got to kind of go with the flow of the draft. So that makes a lot of sense to me.
Yeah, I definitely think it's feel. And actually, one of the things that I think is interesting about the way Shelly phrased her part here, and Shelly, this is my question for you actually, is focusing on playing time doesn't necessarily mean that you're not taking guys with a high ceiling, right? Like, there are one of the players we're going to talk about in this last segment. I'll just preview where my hand is going with this, but like James Wood, the playing time is there. Like, the Nationals have every incentive to play him. We may not know exactly who he is yet. We may not know exactly what that looks like at the major league level, but he's going to play. He's going to hit low in that lineup, and he's going to get a ton of run. And so I guess my question for you is, when you're evaluating playing time, how are you also taking into consideration things like ceiling and floor?
I mean, I guess we're going to talk about this later, but I did like the James Wood pick. I mean, it was a little bit earlier than I was expecting, but I loved it. I mean, yeah, you're exactly right. He's going to play every day, and he's been phenomenal. He's has a chance to be like one of like the, you know, like a five tool player. And that's something that you're willing to take a gamble on, especially if he's going to play every day. You know, guys like that. Yeah. I mean, that does come into account. And that's where, for me, that's where that feel comes in. I'm like, oh yeah, James Wood is going to play every day. I want playing time. That dude could, probably do 30-30. I don't know if he's going to do 30-30 next year, but there he has that, you know, possibility. So I'm going to take James Wood here. That's kind of how I go about things.
Yeah, same. And for the record, we're talking, James Wood went at the 2-3 turn to Jenny Butler, friend of the show, who I think that's a great pick. I loved that pick. You know, Bubba, coming back to your board and looking at it for a second, you mentioned both Royce Lewis and Brenton Doyle. I love that Brenton Doyle pick. I think you got him in the sixth round. That's a guy who, again, gonna play every day, but with potential massive upside. I mean, he's putting together the type of season right now that feels like the same type of season everybody saw from Nolan Jones last year and was like, oh, Nolan Jones must be a fourth rounder, but with better underlying metrics to my eye. Is that sort of what you see in a guy like Brenton Doyle? And talk us through that pick a little bit.
Yeah, it's one of those that I've been told you just took Nolan Jones 2.0. And I'm like, yeah, I get where your head's at on that one because we're seeing a 2020 Rocky. But when it comes to Doyle, one thing, his defense is elite. So no matter if he's hitting or not, he's playing on like Nolan Jones. For now, Brenton Doyle does not have a back problem like Nolan Jones has. So that could be something that lingers for a while. Jones was a character of his ballpark. Babbitt went through the roof for Jones. I'm a Jones fan, but to the increase of the draft pick for Jones was tough. So Doyle, when it came to me, I wanted guys with 2020 upside if I could find them in drafts. Brenton Doyle falling to the sixth round, I think, is pretty sweet because if he finishes this year strong, I think he's a fourth or fifth. Like, what's to differentiate? And I agree that still, like, Jaron Duran and those guys are better than Doyle, but looking at statistical line, what's to differentiate between the two? Like, there's really not a whole lot to differentiate them, but we're getting them four rounds apart. So it's one of those, and this is the blessing and the curse of this early draft is we don't have all the information. We don't have projections. Like, we don't have all these things. And so, you print out player raters, you print out, like you said, dollar values. Everyone's got their way about it, and there'll be guys that are missed, and we'll talk about some stuff coming up on that. But my idea with Doyle is sitting there going, okay, this is my second or third outfielder. This is a guy with a 2020 floor, still plays half his games in Coors. The Rockies still might be horrible. That's very possible because they're run by a great front office. But I still think Doyle has maybe more to prove. He's still very young, and the defense will keep him out there. So I'm a fan of Brenton Doyle.
Yeah, good stuff. What is it Jeff Erickson calls them? The paste-eating Rockies or the Rockies? Or is that Spore? I can't remember. Like, one of them had that line.
I have a buddy that it's ingrained in my head called them the Mountain Mets because they always either get hurt or find ways to screw up their roster. They're the Mountain Mets. It's pretty funny.
It's pretty wild. I don't know. Do we need rebuttals here? I feel like you two are pretty much on the same page here in terms of looking what you're looking for and how you're looking for it. It doesn't really seem like we need last minute rebuttals, but either of you has the floor for one extra minute if you want.
It's all yours, Shelley, if you want. I think we're kind of on the same page here.
Yeah. We're all on the same page.
Awesome. We're going to wrap this one up a little bit differently. A little bit of a three-way debate thing going on here. We're going to have each of us is going to advocate for what pick made us go whoa when we saw this draft board, and I already sort of previewed mine, so I'll kick us off here. I love the James Wood in the third round pick. It is both totally understandable and made me do a double take because he has been in the major leagues for so little time. The numbers are excellent. The playing time looks great. The tools look elite. Yet I was hoping that he'd be a guy that I could sneak in the fifth or sixth round. And Jenny from the top rope is like, absolutely not. I'm going to take him at the 2-3 turn. Love that for her. Love that for the Nationals. But that was the pick that made me just kind of stop in my tracks. Bubba, what about you?
For me, it was Zach Neto. And it's kind of a two-part whoa for me. Because whoa is I'm a big Zach Neto fan. I love Zach Neto. I have him on a ton of teams. Dude's going to be 2020 this year. Counting stats could be bad. People point to the counting stats. Well, he has a bad manager in Ron Washington that kept him at the bottom of the order for so long. Like, he's hitting second now. Hopefully they see this as the future and he hits in front of Mike Trout next year for 70 games or so. That'll be fun. But Neto, I think the sky's the limit with this kid, at least a 2020 guy with good counting stats along the ways. I've heard people say, well, what if he's Jeremy Pena again? Okay, that's slightly concerning, but after a down year, Jeremy Pena starting to show signs of life again this year to be serviceable, fourth round serviceable, who knows? But for me, it was more kind of like how the James Wood, I get it, but it's like, whoa, that just happened type thing. When Neto went to James Anderson, who we've said to each other for years when I have him on my show every offseason that we cannot draft in the same leagues because his draft board was so many guys that I like. It was very frustrating. When he drafted him, I was just like, I sat back and said, whoa, because I was literally looking at him thinking, okay, do I take him in round five? Do I take him in round six? Then he went in round four before me. And I'm like, okay, well, that's an interesting situation there. So Zach Neto was my whoa, not because I think it's a bad pick, just more, I didn't know where he would go. And it stood out to me a lot.
Yeah, that's a great call from James Anderson. He also took William Contreras in the third. That's a pretty much does look like a Bubba team.
That was one that I think hopefully they edited. I didn't listen to the replay of that podcast. Hopefully that was edited out.
Fair enough. Shelley, what was your woe from this draft board?
For me, it was Jacob deGrom going in the third round. I mean, I love deGrom. Last year, I took him in the third round, but we thought he was hurt then, but I was like, oh, I'll just take that gamble there. So I get that from that standpoint. But again, like, we haven't seen him throw yet. And the thing with DeGrom, the thing I love and hate from a real baseball fan, I love that he just chucks it, always hitting like 99, 100. But what I hate as a fantasy manager is he does that. I'm afraid that he doesn't have like a speed limit, if that makes sense. Like, he is just full bore just all the time. And he's getting older. He's had his second Tommy John. And that scares me. I mean, this could definitely pay off for Rob in the third round. I hope it does. I really do. I hope it does for him. But that... It just scared. It was like, whoa, what? Third round. Okay. I was thinking that he might go like fifth or sixth, but apparently not.
Yeah, DeGrom is so hard because inning for inning, you're getting the best pitcher in baseball. And then the question is, how many of those innings does Jacob DeGrom have in him in a given year? And I think he's really hard. He's a really hard pitcher to evaluate for that reason.
Yeah, I'm with you. The DeGrom one, he was never on my board because I just don't know how to evaluate him. It's one that he should throw maybe one or two starts to finish this year if he looks good. And then, you know, you get one or two good spring starts, he's probably back into the second round. That's just the reality of it. So it's tough. But I'm with you guys. Like, I'm just so torn on what to do with him because, as Shelley said, he only knows one speed. And that's what quickly got him hurt again. And that just concerns me going forward.
Man, speaking of guys who would be a wicked closer, not to give the Rangers any idea,
go full John Smoltz.
Seriously, let him do the thing. I mean, I sort of have a hunch that that's what the Padres are eventually going to do with Yu Darvish when and if he comes back. But who knows? Okay. All right. Any other woe moments from the draft board that we really want to share before we move to our love it or leave it and close this one out?
To me, it's just more the injured guys, like where they went, because I didn't know what to expect in those regards. And I guess the other woe moment that everyone noticed out the gate, through 11 rounds, Jackson Holliday did not get drafted. So out of all the other, like Jackson Merrill went pretty early as expected. Jackson Churio, that's a great debate all offseason between where to take those two. But you had some young risers and then the injured guys going later that kind of when they get called out, you're like, oh, okay. Not really knowing how to take it at that point in time in the draft room.
Yeah, that's a great call out. We had the Jackson Merrill, Jackson Churio debate on the show last week. So listeners should go back and listen to that episode because we were definitely having that debate here.
Let me have a fun one for you real quick. Sorry to interrupt. But no, you're good. Okay, there were two players. We'll do the top pitcher and top hitter. Who do you think was the top pitcher on the player rater that did not get drafted? Seth Lugo.
I'm like staring at the board as if I'm going to define it somehow.
And then I'll give you top hitter. This one,
you know, must be so sad.
The top hitter, it was an all-star this year, by the way.
I'll give you Isak Paredes. No, I'm just kidding.
NL West.
Isak Paredes being called an all-star is going to be my
Teoscar. Did he go?
Jerks and Profar.
He's had a weird season.
He's had a weird couple of seasons.
Those were ones that were pointed out right away. Like, these guys didn't go. I'm like, yeah, I think we could all sit back and with a grain of salt look at those seasons and think that's a tough one. But just always something interesting when these drafts take place.
Yeah, for real. So much good stuff on this draft board. Again, we'll link it in the show notes so you can peruse it for yourself. Let us know if there are some debates that you would like to hear covered from this draft board in future episodes, because we're always happy to hear those. You can find us at PL Fantasy Feud. Speaking of, before we get to our love it or leave it, Bubba, thank you again for joining us. Where can people find you if they are looking for you on social media and or podcast land or writing world?
If you're looking for me on Twitter, it's BDentrick, BDENTREK. And I tweet everything out there, my writing, my podcasting, you name it, I do it. But Bench with Bubba and Bubba in the Bloom. Bubba in the Bloom, we record Tuesday and Thursday night live on YouTube, and they drop Friday morning for your listening pleasures and all your podcast platforms. So come check those out. We got some fun ideas for every year. We kind of grow that quote unquote brand. And Ryan and I got some fun ideas for the future. So come join the party over there at Bubba in the Bloom.
It's a great show. It's a fun show to listen to live. If you ever happen to see it on those like Twitter space or on your stream, definitely hang out for a bit. Always a good crew with the Bubba and the Bloom podcast. We're going to move to our love it or leave it. One thing from baseball news this week that you are super into or over. Bubba, as our guest, you get to go first.
It's a sad and a happy love it is what I'll say. As Joey Votto hung it up. You know, he tried to come back with the Jays this year. It didn't work out. It's a shame he didn't get one more swan song either with Toronto in Canada, you know, being Canadian and all, or in Cincinnati. But what I love that it did is I think we can all agree as baseball fans, Joey Votto is probably one of the best human beings to ever play baseball. At least it feels that way when you watch this man. I've said for years, please make him the head of the Players Association, get rid of Tony Clark, or heck, make him the head of all of baseball. Get that guy that enjoys a piece of metal as the trophy out of the way. So I think Joey Votto would be the spitting image of perfection to represent baseball that we love. You know, we play fantasy, but I'm pretty sure we all love baseball before we play fantasy. So seeing Joey Votto retire, and then like even on the Giants broadcast and other broadcasts, like they're all telling stories about Joey. Joey flew back and was in Cincinnati to say goodbye to all the people there the first day. Like the dude's just an amazing human being. So Joey Votto, we lost a good player. We didn't lose a good person. He is obviously still with us, but we lost a good player to watch every day.
Yeah, I could not agree with that more. And I'm actually going to take some moderator privilege here and jump in with mine, because mine is also a Joey Votto love it or leave it this week. Please, for the love of God, people who own the Reds, I need you to make Joey Votto a Red for one day so that he can retire in front of the fans at Great American Ballpark with all of the accolades and cheering and love that he deserves. I've loved dozens of things that Joey Votto has done over the years. Like, go find the interview where he says he wants to be a bus driver when he retires. That's great stuff. Go find it, like the clip where he's on Christopher Russo's show. But maybe one of my favorite things, and I'm actually working on a piece about this that will be out later this week. Joey Votto was a massive Cub killer. Like, he was, if you are a Chicago Cubs fan, Joey Votto did more damage to this team than just about anyone. He's in the Pujols category of like this man destroyed the Chicago Cubs for his entire career. And we let him hear it on occasion. When Joey Votto put his message out on Instagram, there was one field that he shouted out that was not a field that he played in. And it was the boos at Wrigley Field and how much he appreciated that as a player. And we appreciated him too. And I feel like that man deserves to go out on his own terms, and he deserves to go out with a huge standing ovation. So I don't know how the Reds do this, but please make it happen.
It's not like they're playing for anything right now, so it shouldn't be too difficult.
Well, and rosters are about to expand. Just like do a one day deal, bring him out.
You'd sell out the stadium. Look how much, like, they are all greedy. Like, you know how much money, and like you can make jerseys that say the last. Oh, you could make so much of it now. This, it's ridiculous.
I would go to Joey Votto Day. I would go to Cincinnati for Joey Votto Day. Oh, yeah. All right, Shelley, bring us home with your love it or leave it this week.
So I'm going to do something weird and say that the Red Sox did something great. And actually the Red Sox broadcast crew did something great. The Portland Sea Dogs, their two play-by-play announcers are both women. And what they decided to do this week was bring them in and have them call the first ever, you know, woman called duo broadcast thing for the Boston Red Sox. And I just think it's like really cool. And it feels really weird to say good things about Nesson, because I will never forgive them for what they did to Don Orsello. But this was really cool. I don't know if they're going to stay, you know, with the Red Sox throughout their entire careers, but I think both of them are going to, like, they have a bright future. So I'm excited to see what they do. And it was just really, really cool to see and hear.
The Cubs did this last year when they had Beth Moens, Elise Menaker, and Taylor McGregor was like their whole set. And it was the coolest thing. I don't know how to explain this. And Shelley, I'm sure you will appreciate this, but like, it was so weird to love this sport as a kid. And like, my idol is Harry Carey. Like, there's no woman doing the thing that I can be like, I want to be her when I grow up. And I was just like, my idol was Harry Carey. And then my idol was Vin Scully. And I was like, I love this game. And I love the people who talk about it and get to write about it for a living and get to analyze it. And it's just my favorite thing to dive into. And I'm going to cry and I'm going to try not to, but when Beth Moens got like, just even she does part-time announcing for the Cubs when Boog is doing like ESPN Sunday Night Baseball or other types of things. And she'll come in and do play-by-play. One, she's great. But two, I was unprepared for how I was going to feel the first time I saw a woman do play-by-play for my favorite team. And I wish that joy to every woman who loves sports. And I love that no future generation of little girls will ever have to worry about that, because there's so many people now, and they're gonna have dozens of women to look up to, and that's great.
Yeah, well said.
I personally love seeing it, because like I said, I told you before the show, my daughter watches baseball with me, so like when the A's are on and Jessica Kleinschmidt comes on or something, she gets all like excited. Like at first she's like, what's she doing? And I've explained it to her. I'm like, yeah, she's actually, you know, covering the game, because she was confused because all the players are guys out there and everything. I'm like, there's more than just what's on the field. And then she's starting to learn. So I appreciate it, because I can, you know, gets her more interested and teaches her more things and expands the whole aspect of baseball, which again, we all love. So that is a beautiful thing.
Well, and you have Alyssa Nockin there in San Francisco. So you got
I knew Alyssa when she was born because she's from Woodland and her brother played baseball with me. So I've seen her grow up. I saw her play softball. She probably doesn't even remember who I am now, but I've been to her house many times when she was a kid. And when she got picked up there, that was a really odd, like the hometown people. We were like over the moon about, you know, the first woman, you know, coaching with the big leagues and all that kind of stuff. And it's really cool stuff. And I was worried when Kapler left, as much as I did not like Gabe Kapler, I was worried that he at least was open-minded to things like that and trying new things. And I was worried, you know, getting, curmudgeon Melvin in there was going to – because he brought a bunch of new coaches in. And I'm like, oh, they're going to get rid of her. Like, this is going to be the way it's going to go. And they didn't, thank goodness. And she even had a baby. I thought that would be their excuse. So look at, you know, these chauvinists that they once were. No, she's still there. So it's great to see. And hopefully we see more of that too. Like there's no reason we shouldn't. So like, I know we have some minor league ones. So that's good. But keep it coming. That'd be fun as well.
10-10 recommend. Bubba, thank you so much for being here. We're so excited to have you on the show. I am Sarah Sanchez. You can find me at BCB_Sarah. You can find my writing about the Cubs at BleedCubbyBlue.com. You can find my baseball, fantasy baseball writing at baseball HQ. You can find the show at PL Fantasy Feud. Shelly, you can find on Twitter at Shelly, remind me of your handle because I'm going to mess it up.
Shelly_643.
I always want to say 642 and I don't know why. I apologize. Shelly and I are here every Wednesday with all of the debates that you need for your fantasy baseball decisions. And we will be back next week. Until then.